Maluti, they're going to do the presentation, but we'll take both presentations. And then we will interact with them when they are done. I'm not sure who starts with you. Okay, thank you. I apologize. No, my apologies, dear. You can step there.
Thank you, Chair. I'm leaving the delegation. So, I'm leaving a delegation of Umalusi and a delegation of TBE. So, Umalusi, as you know, that is led also by the board but by the chairperson. So, we have brought the chairperson here, Prof. Volmik. So, we should not just assume that we know one another and the CEO and the Teracomit. So I'm going to hand over now to the chairperson of the board of Umalus. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Deputy Minister. Thank you for the introduction. I also would like to greet all the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. It's for us an honour to be here, but I'd like to introduce, the DM has already introduced the CEO, but there are two more members of Umalusi. One is Ms. Odwa Malimakwani, she's at the back, Executive Manager for Quality Assurance and Monitoring, and then Mary Louise Madarani, Senior Manager, Quality Assurance of Assessment, School Qualification. That is our delegation today. I will just make a few very brief comments. Firstly, as I said, we are delighted to be given this opportunity to report the work of Umalusi to the Portfolio Committee in line with the Quality Assurance of Assessment mandate. I also want to say that I'm pleased to report to the Portfolio Committee that Umalusi has once again fulfilled its quality assurance mandate through the oversight role of one of the committees of council, namely the Assessment Standards Committee. Before I say something about the Assessment Standards Committee, it may be necessary for me to say the obvious, that Umalusi's quality assurance processes, the whole regime, includes, firstly, the external moderation of question papers, the provincial department's state of readiness to administer the examinations. Umalusi also monitors the conduct of the examinations and verifies the marking process. And then finally, the standardization of exam results. So as a committee, coming back to the Assessment Standards Committee, that committee has worked very hard in collaboration with the Umalusi staff during the December period and throughout the 2019 academic year to quality assure the processes that I've just outlined and also finalize the national exam results. And to this end, Umalusi announced its approval of the release of the 2019 national examination at a media briefing on the 3rd of January after satisfying itself that based on the evidence presented to it, and notwithstanding some minor irregularities that were detected, the overall conduct of the 2019 examinations was fair and was credible. It's worth noting that the 2019 national examinations were largely incident-free in terms of any systemic irregularities that could have compromised the integrity of the exam. And for this reason, Umalusi commends the Department of Basic Education for putting systems in place to ensure a relatively incident-free examination. And the systems have improved remarkably in the past year. Having said that, Honourable Chair, I now wish to hand over to Dr. Rakometsi to lead the presentation.
Thank you very much, Professor Volmink, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, Honorable Deputy Minister, and Honorable Members, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for the opportunity of presenting on the DBE 2019 National Senior Certificate Examinations. I'm going to be sharing the presentation with Memar Luis Madalan, and the presentation is going to focus on the following: UMALU's mandate and regulatory framework, where we derive our mandate from, framework for quality assurance of assessment, the quality assurance processes undertaken in 2019, that will focus on the scope of the 2019 quality assurance of assessment, areas of improvement, and tracking of directives for compliance from 2017 to 2019, where we have said to the department this area needs improvement, and we are tracking how far they've met their obligation in terms of the directives that they've been given by UMALU Singh. We're going to also be focusing on the standardization and resulting. We will look at the recommendations and then we'll conclude. Now, regarding UMALU's mandate and regulatory framework, we derive our mandate for quality assurance of assessment from the National Qualifications Framework, NQF Act number 67 of 2008, sections 27H and 27I, and the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act, as amended in 2008. Section 17A, which states the following, that the Council must perform the external moderation of assessment of all assessment bodies and educational institutions, that the Council may adjust raw marks during the standardization process, and that the Council must, with the concurrence of the Director General and after consultation with the relevant assessment body or education institution, approve the publication of the results of learners if Council is satisfied that the assessment body or education institution has satisfied the conditions that warrant such an approval. That is our mandate. Now, regarding the framework for quality assurance of assessment, we ensure that assessment leading to the award of a certificate by UMALU in schools, in adult education centers, technical and vocational education and training colleges is of the required standards. This in order to ensure that the certificates issued by UMALU are credible and they have currency. And we achieve this through a number of processes: the moderation of examination of question papers, practical assessment tasks, common assessment tasks in the case of life orientation. We monitor and moderate school-based assessments. We monitor the conduct, administration, management of assessment and examination processes. We monitor and moderate marking. We manage the concession and examination irregularities. We standardize the assessment outcomes. Finally, we approve the release of the results. The National Senior Certificate Examinations are administered by three different assessment bodies, namely the Department of Basic Education, the Independent Examinations Board, and the South African Comprehensive Assessment Institute, SACAI. All these three assessment bodies are quality assured and certified by UMALU. We are the only body that issues certificates for the sector in the country. Now, if you were to look at the pattern in terms of the candidates that wrote the NSC from 2017 to 2018 up to 2019, you'll see the pattern that, with regard to the DB in particular, there's been a slight decrease in the number of learners from 2017, 800,000 to 787,000 in 2019. And you can look at the pattern with the other assessment bodies as well. You'll observe that the DBE as an assessment body is a huge system as compared to the IB and SACAI. They are very small. Now, regarding the quality assurance process undertaken in 2019, I'm going to, with your kind permission, DM and Honorable Chairperson, hand over to remember Luis Madalán to proceed from there, and then I'll take over towards the conclusion of the presentation.
Thank you, Dr. Rakumetsi, and good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister, and all the members of the Portfolio Committee and the colleagues. I'm going to be looking at the overview of the quality assurance that we undertook last year for the Department of Basic Education. As you can see there in the screen, we have indicated that we have moderated and approved 134 question papers for the DBE, and that happened long before the writing of the examinations. And between July and October of 2019, we also did the moderation of the SBA of 15 subjects, not all subjects that were written in grade 12 who were able to do the moderation of the SBA, only 15. And we selected a number of subjects for orals as well. We did that in six PEDs for six languages, and we also verified the moderation of practical assessment in seven provincial education departments. Before the examinations were written, we then did the state of readiness to check on how the provinces were ready to conduct the 2019 examination. We did that in all the nine provinces. And during the examination, we were able to monitor 311 examination centers and 18 marking centers. Now, Umalusi attended all and participated in 132 marking guideline standardization meetings. These meetings happen before the marking happens, and because the memos or the marking guidelines that are going to be used for marking needs to be authorized by Umalusi. Since we approve the question paper, we then have to make it certain that the marking guidelines that they're going to be using at marking, we had an eye in that. So then we attended the marking guideline meetings for the 132 question papers, and we authorized and approved those marking guidelines. We 35 subjects were sampled for verification of marking. When the marking was taking place, our moderators went from several marking centers, like indicated in the previous slide, and there we then verified 35 subjects. This means our moderators went practical into the particular scripts to check whether the marking was according to the marking guideline that we have approved. The DBE presented a total of 67 subjects for the standardization, which the CEO will speak to later, and all irregularities were identified were managed in accordance with the regulations pertaining to the conduct, administration, and management of the National Senior Certificate. When examinations are written, the provincial departments report to us on a daily basis on the occurrences during the examinations, and we are able to gather then what is happening, whether those are irregularities or not, and we follow up to see that they are being attended to according to policy. A detailed report covering all the quality assurance of assessment processes will be shared with the department. In fact, that is already shared with the department, so that then they can look at the issues that we have indicated as directives, which we will still be tracking to see if they are performing or they are improving on those. Now I'll go into the individual processes. When we look at the question papers, like I've indicated, we moderated 134 question papers. Now the slide here depicts times a particular question paper came through our hands in moderating those. But I need to clarify that all the question papers that were written were finally approved. Even if the slide shows that some question papers came through our hands several times, it doesn't say the question paper that was written was substandard. We eventually agreed with the examiners to a point that question paper, when it went out to the public, it was of correct standard. So that indicates the improvement through the years from 2016 to 2019, what we have observed in the question papers. And when the question papers were moderated, there were areas of improvement. Like every year, we present them with the DBE with a report stating the challenges that we have observed in the moderation of question papers. So then, when they present question papers for the other year, we also commend them on the improvements that we have noticed. So those are the improvements that we have listed, that we have seen in the 2019 question papers. And furthermore,
we're also then going to be giving them the directives as they are listed. The directives are a comparison between 2017, 18, and 19, like the CEO said. We don't just indicate that this we are not happy with in this year and leave it like that. We then, the following year when we do our processes, check and verify how far have they improved on that particular item that we have indicated. You will see some of the directives that we have issued, they were really able to deal with those and they didn't come back in 2019. But there are those that have been persistent from 2017 up to 2019, we're still observing those and we are in communication with the DBE to see how those can be improved so that they keep the standard of a good question paper. I'm not going to go into individual those of those items if you allow me to do that. These are more of the directives we have issued for the DBE and also for the moderation of SBA. I will also give the scope there. Those are the subjects. Remember initially I indicated how many subjects did we do their moderation of their SBA. These are the subjects that we went into between July and October of 2019. And the oral moderation, which we rather started doing last year. So we selected those number of subjects to do the oral moderation in the different provinces. We also did a moderation of the practical assessment task. And we selected these provinces, Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Northern Cape, and Northwest, within those subjects that are listed. We observed areas of improvement. This I need to comment. We have noticed that in visual arts, learners were able to produce creative and innovative conceptual artwork, and provincial moderation processes have improved in visual arts in Limpopo. So Limpopo needs to be commended for the improvement that we saw in their SBA. However, there are still directives that we have issued to the department on the different processes that items that we have identified. You can see on this slide, the first two are not compliant, the third one was partially compliant, and that partially compliant one was carried over from 2017, so they are still struggling in getting that correct. Then a newer directive was issued. The last one there, develop policy to pronounce on the adjustment additions of marks during oral moderation. That is a new directive which we are going to be checking in 2020. More of the directives that we issued to the department are listed there, but I'm happy to say the first two you can see they were noted in 2018, but in 2019 immediately they were compliant with those. But then there were three new directives that were issued as listed in that slide. Again, moderation of SBA, more of directives issued for 2019. There is a number of them, but I guess the department will also address those this year. Before marking happens, the different provincial departments appoint markers. Now we have made it also part of our responsibility as we are mandated to do so. We go out to the provinces to make sure that the markers that are appointed are the relevant people. You can imagine that all things can be well during the year and the candidates will write the exams, but if the people who are entrusted in their marking are not the correct markers, what could happen to those candidates? So it is very important that the people who are assigned the responsibility of marking are the right people. And the audit of appointment of markers was conducted in all the 9 PEDs, and still we also identified areas of improvement, and these are improvement on the issues that we highlighted in the previous year. Here are a few of them. In the Western Cape, they administered a competency test which assessed both content knowledge and marking skills, and the results were used as an additional criterion in the selection of markers. The inclusion of novice markers by all PEDs to build capacity and for the succession planning, and there was also verification of the accuracy of applicants' information by the selection panels at schools and district level in the Eastern Cape and that enhances the validity of the application. It's very important that the province, when they do their selection, they will have to be in contact with the schools who will confirm the credibility of the people that are going to be appointed. However, there were still also directives that came out of it, and we had one that was in 2018, MACAS selection panels consider recommendations made by principals. We identified issues where certain recommendations made by principals were ignored by the provinces in their appointment. But I should also highlight the fact that after we have done the audit of markers, we report to the PEDs, and challenges that we have identified, they normally address those before the marking. So it doesn't necessarily mean what I have indicated here could be part of the issues that may have challenged our marking. The issues were addressed. Again, there is two items also that we found when we did the audit of markers, which resulted in directives issues to the department. As I mentioned, before the writing of the exams, we do a state of readiness audit of the different provinces, and the state of readiness audit for the provinces was done on those dates as listed in the slide. And here are areas of improvement that we noted. Some of the directives that we issued in 2018 of state of readiness were addressed. Registration of candidates was completed as per the PED management plan. Some PEDs engaged in advocacy on the procedure for application for concessions. This we will see later in the slide, rather in the presentation. That is a concern that we have, that concessions are not well taken care of in provinces. The CEO will speak to that later. The creation of a database of scribes and readers to be used by examination centers which applied for concession. It's important that the schools are able to access that database so that they are able to use the relevant people during the writing of the examination. There are areas of improvement also that we have noted, an improvement of security at the examining material and examination, and the storage of examination materials, and where double locking system was used, secure and well-managed printing process, electronic storage of scripts for some provinces, adherence to norms and standards for collection and return of examination material, an increased target for monitoring of examinations to between 80 and 90, and I guess this is what resulted in the reduction of irregularities, because the department was vigilantly monitoring the writing of the examination. The appointment of health officials at marking venues, an improved marker selection process as indicated earlier, an improvement in resolving identified examination irregularities. Remember, if these are not attended to, candidates are not resulted. So the department makes sure that before they submit their results to us for approval, irregularities are being attended to. However, we still have directives issued as listed in that slide. They are improving, you can see partially in the first one, compliant in the second and third one, partially compliant, but then there are new ones. Then that one below, staff shortage of various levels of the system is addressed as a matter of urgency. We request that the department must address that, because when we do our state of readiness, we realize and find out in different provinces that there is a high shortage of staff in some of the examination sections. All printing facilities to keep trading registers. Those that are familiar with with examinations, you will know how delicate the examination material is, so that if it is not properly shredded or it is not destroyed properly, you may have a leakage of a question paper. Hence, we request that the department make sure that all the PEDs have that in place. Two new directives that we have issued, contingency plans, are put in place to address the shortage of markers. Procurement of reliable and roadworthy vehicles. There are provinces where we find out that the monitors are struggling to reach their destination. They are using old vehicles which we felt that's a danger to the staff that the department employ, and hence we have issued that directive. When the exams are written, we do monitor the examinations. For this year, like I've indicated earlier, we monitored 311, and we were able also to monitor the examination center in Swaziland, which is writing our examinations through the KZN provincial department. Areas of improvement noted there: a significant improvement in the system of safekeeping of exam material that was indicated. Systems were put in place to improve invigilator training, which also attests to the reduction in irregularities. If our invigilators know what they have to do and when to do it and how to handle irregularities, then the examination will run smoothly. Packaging and transmission of answer books was done in accordance with policy at all the centers that we have monitored, the 311. However, then we still have directives as noted there. The first two are coming from 2017. Currently, the first one is partially addressed. Then the next one, we found them to be compliant. Compliant in all the three, which I'm not going to speak to. However, there were three that they were not compliant which then became directives for 2019, where the PED conduct pre-writing audits for all examination centers and provide feedback reports to the examination centers. They need to check on all the exam centers and give them information on what to improve on before they write the exam. Live orientation was also a concern for us. It's written during the year, not at the end of the year, but we found that the monitoring of the writing of the live orientation was not satisfactory, though the mark of live orientation forms part of the final year mark. So we feel it needs to be treated with the courtesy that it deserves. All examination centers administering computer-based examinations, we recommend that they have a backup plan for electricity supply. We all know that we had a threat of load shedding during the exams last year, and we had question papers that were affected by this, so we request that all the centers that administer such exams should have a backup plan. We also monitored the marking, like I indicated, in 18 marking centers, and there also we identified a few areas of improvement. The DBE has successfully addressed the following directives of compliance that we issued in 2018, the timely provisioning of marking guidelines to all marking centers, improvement on the security management at marking centers, and we also noted a significant improvement in dealing with examination irregularities, as I've already indicated. However, there are also irregularities identified. The first two are spoken to, they are now complied with. The third one is partially. Ensure that monitoring of marking centers by assessment bodies takes place and evidence of such visit is available at the marking center. So that is an irregularity issued. A new one that came up this year, the department must ensure that marking centers where computer-based are spoken to that, they need to have a backup plan. We attended 132 marking guidelines, areas of improvement. There were challenges in 2018, and those were addressed in that list of areas of improvement. And then for the directives that we have here, from 2017 to 2019, in 44 question papers nationally, less than 20 scripts were marked in preparation for the pre-marking. That's a bit of a concern because the people that are going to go back into the provinces to be then the supervisors of marking should have had an opportunity of marking the scripts before they come to marking guidelines so that they can then make meaningful contribution to the improvement of the marking guidelines. But now if they're not given that opportunity to mark prior to the marking guideline discussion, we feel it is a disadvantage on those colleagues. Hence, it is directive issued for the DBU to take care of that. Just as in 2018, an average of 9 days between examination and marking guideline meetings was maintained, and that we feel is a consistent practice that they can follow. And they are compliant in all the other three that are listed here, but not compliant in the interpreters are available through out the SASL home language marking session. It is our query here that when they do marking of SASL home language, interpreters are not always available to be on site, and it is important because there are different people who are marking. Some of them are not actually SASL home language speakers, but they may be teaching that language, and it is important that there need to be interpreters on site. And they are compliant in the other one that is listed there. Then verification of marking, we verified, we send our moderators around to verify the marked scripts, and there we issued a directive which carried over from 2017, it is still persistent there. We found that in Gauteng and Limpopo started marking earlier than the other PEDs, and that creates a challenge if when the rest of the country is marking and there are responses that were not in the marking guideline identified, then the other provinces that have finished marking are then a bit disadvantaged because they then don't get that information. Few of non-compliance directives also issued there. Appointed markers confirm their attendance for marking prior to this. But this I think I've spoken to because if we identify this, they are then discussed with the provinces and they deal with them during the marking or before the marking happens. And this, as identified, are listed for the department to address. And now the next section, which is standardization of results, I will give back to the CEO to deal with. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Marie-Louise. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm going to be talking to the standardization and resulting. And just to remind the members, when I dealt with our legislative framework, I indicated that we derive our mandate to standardize, to adjust marks, raw marks, from our founding legislation, the General and Further Education and Training Quality Assurance Act. Now, standardization is a process used to eliminate the effect of factors other than the learner's aptitude, knowledge, and abilities of their performance. It is not a process that is unique to South Africa. It is a process that is followed by all large-scale assessments the world over. This is intended to ensure that learners are not advantaged or disadvantaged by factors other than their knowledge of the subject, abilities, and aptitudes. And also to achieve comparability and consistency of results from one year to the next so that a particular level of pass is comparable from one year to the other. The university should not be second-guessing what this level of pass is. The employer should not be guessing. So should the parents also not be guessing. Now, we base our standardization on a number of principles. I'm going to mention only four. That no adjustment should exceed 10% of the historical average in either direction, either upwards or downwards. This is very important. So we cannot adjust exceeding that level of 10%. And if the distribution of the raw marks is below or above the historical average, the marks may be adjusted either way, subject to the limitations. That is very, very important. In the case of an individual candidate, the adjustment effect should not exceed half of the raw mark obtained by the candidate. After considering qualitative and quantitative reports, Umalusi formulates positions on each subject. And I may just add that when we standardize, the standardization, either downwards or upwards, will not affect the rank order of the candidates. Number one, in terms of the marks obtained, will remain number one. So will number two. So there can be no way in which, because of standardization, one candidate will be getting better marks than the other. Now, the focus usually when we standardize by the South African media, South African public, is on the DBE. But we need to emphasize that all assessment bodies whose qualifications we quality assure, their results are also standardized. We standardize the Department of Higher Education and Training in the qualifications indicated on the table there. We standardize the IEB, Sakai and Benchmark Assessment Agency, according to the qualifications that they do offer. Now, we also submit that standardization does not only happen in December. Standardization, in actual fact, starts at the time when even the examiners are appointed. Because the level of qualification of an examiner, we will say we are maintaining a standard by appointing an examiner of this experience and these qualifications. Now, the levels at which we standardize are listed there. Question papers are set by examiners, that is standardization. Examiners submit question papers to the internal moderators. They submit them to the external moderators of UMALUSI. When we monitor the writing of the examinations, we are also standardizing. When we do the monitoring of the exam state of readiness, we are standardizing. Question papers are approved by the external moderators. We are also standardized verification of marking. And when we verify the capturing of marks, we are trying to maintain standards by that kind of verification. Then comes the standardization that happens in December, in the 1.5 week where the members of the Assessment Standards Committee assemble at UMALUSI in Pretoria. That is also standardization. And when we announce to the Chairperson of Council the approval of the results, that is standardization as well, because we are trying to maintain standards. Now, in the next slide, we've got a comparative table that shows the number of subjects that were standardized over the year. You see that initially we had only 58. The number has gone up to 67. And we can see the pattern of how many were kept at ROMAX, how many were adjusted upwards, how many were adjusted downwards. Very important to note is that our first bet, our first preference, is to keep the marks as raw. That shows that the standard has been maintained, the examiners have not said a hard paper, and so forth and so on. There are many variables that are considered. We made a number of observations during the standardization of results in 2019 in December. For instance, in history, we were concerned with the consistent easiness, which raised some concern. It is questioned whether the subject develops analytic and critical thinking, visual literacy and interpretation. In English first additional language, compared to all gateway subjects, ranks year on year as the easiest subject, because we've got what we call pairs analysis. We pair the subjects and we compare the performance. Does the subject assist learners well enough to prepare them to learn and perform through English language across the curriculum needs dedicated attention, and that has been brought to the attention of the department. Regarding South African Sign Language, home language, we have said the following need attention. We need codification and the standardization of the language in South Africa, as various dialects pose a lot of challenges for interpretation. Teachers offering the subject should be appropriately qualified in the field, and earlier exposure of learners to the subject is important in schooling. Regarding mathematics, we observe that there is no improvement in the performance despite the interventions. The decrease in the number of learners who do mathematics and the increase in the number of learners offering mathematical literacy are some observations that we made. And we also observe that the Department of Basic Education, unlike all other assessment bodies, is not utilizing the concessions that we have that have to be applied for learners to be given extra time and so forth and so on. We are saying that is what the department through the different provincial education departments have to focus on. The recommendation, we are saying training of teachers in the development of good quality assessment tasks and marking guidelines, more especially the development and application of rubrics. That is critical. So that should be happening at school level already. That our teachers should be able to set quality items as they prepare the learners for the examinations and as they do continuous assessment during the course of the year. There must be evidence of moderation of formal assessment, at different levels, for example, at district and school levels. Training of teachers in marking, interpretation of learner responses, setting of common task paper for a group of schools, and conduct of group marking sessions. Those are some of the recommendations that we are making. Ensure that effective remediation and feedback for the teachers and the learners is done. And we have to also analyze learner performance and establish why learners perform well in some sections and poorly in other sections. So that if there were to be question by question analysis to say learners perform badly in question 5, which is for instance trigonometry, then that would give us more direction in terms of the interventions that have to be employed in trying to improve learner performance. We also say we have to use assessment and examinations data to improve teaching and learning. We can't just be teaching. We have to say the following areas in whatever we are teaching are proving to be a problem at the point of assessment. Therefore, we need to focus more in those areas. What follows, Chairperson, and I'm not going to read through the statement, it was publicized in the different media houses, the approval statement that the Chairperson of Council pronounced on when he approved the results. Those are the areas that we said we approved the results, that they were credible and that there is overall integrity in the results. And we raised a number of concerns. One of them was to block the results of candidates implicated in irregularities pending further investigation by the DBE. And once the DBE would have finished its investigation, they would submit a recommendation to us, to our council for approval. The blocking of the centers which were unaccredited to write the examinations was also done. And then that the department should deal with the directives for compliance and that the improvement plans must reach Umalusi by the 14th of February 2020. That is very important so that we are able to check whether the department is having a plan to improve on areas that have been highlighted. On that note, Chairperson, DM and Professor Holming, I want to thank the committee for inviting us to come and do this presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Doc. DBE? Dr. Polia, we must agree on time and presenting. I know you can talk too much.
Honourable Chairperson, our Deputy Minister, members of honourable members of the committee, members of Umalusi, including the Chairperson and the CEO, we consider this a special honour to be able to present the performance of the system to this very important committee, and we regard the National Senior Certificate, Honourable Chair, as the most important barometer of how the system is performing as a whole. And it gives us an opportunity to look at the system from various perspectives. And every year, Honourable Chair, we try to do a deeper analysis of the data that is presented to us so that we get a better perspective of what our strengths are and what our weaknesses. The title of the presentation says Sustaining a system on the rise. And I think by our own admission, and DM and Minister have already also indicated this, that we are on the rise, but we admit that there are certain areas that we still need to give serious attention to, and we'll talk about that a little later. I'm not sure why our presentation doesn't want to move. Some help, please. Okay. While our experts are getting that attended to, the presentation will look at the analysis of the data, and we'll be looking at various dimensions, like I mentioned. And we started with what we refer to as the inclusive basket of criteria, where we look at the performance of the system not just from one dimension, but looking at different dimensions of performance. And that, we think, gives you a more holistic indication of how the system is performing. And we will then spend quite a bit of time looking at the issues raised by Umalusi and how we are responding to the issues raised. And I think what is very important to understand is that we evaluate the system from a perspective of the broad principles relating to equity, redress, access, inclusivity, and towards the latter part of the presentation, I will then look at how we satisfy these basic principles. So we're not able to get it right? Okay. My apologies for that. Do we all have hard copies? No. We do. Okay. So maybe, Honorable Chair, my apologies for that. We will. Yeah, we'll work from the hard copies. I will move on to the size and shape of the basic education sector, and I think this is just to remind the members of the committee that we're dealing with an extremely large system with over 24,000 schools, and this includes 23,000 public schools and 1,900 independent schools, and if one looks at the total number of learners, we're looking at over 13 million learners that are in the care of us as officials, together with the various committees, obviously under the leadership of our minister and deputy minister. And this is indeed a major responsibility, and we take that very seriously. On slide 13, just to indicate that this was the sixth cohort to sit for the National Senior Certificate based on CAPS. And as part of our improvement, the area that we've been focusing on in the last few years is school-based assessment. Because if we get school-based assessment right, that would certainly assist us in improving teaching and learning. This particular class has been affected by a number of policies, and I think two of the policies that stand out is the policy on progression, which I'll elaborate on a little bit later, and then the policy on multiple examination opportunity. On slide 15, we give you a better indication of the size of this examination. In fact, it is indicated that second to the national general election comes examination in terms of its size. And the fact that an activity of this magnitude is run over a six-week period where accuracy to every detail is of the most important dimension, I think is certainly one of the factors that needs to be highlighted. On slide 17, Honorable Chairperson, we look at the enrollments. The enrollments would be the number of learners that registered to write the exam. And if one looks at the numbers, we have a number of 667,000 that enrolled for the examination in 2015, and we had the highest number in 2016, which was 674,000. And thereafter, the system seems to have stabilized around 620,000. Now, just to explain this, because I think it's important, that in 2015, we introduced the policy on progression. And the policy on progression simply indicates that a learner should not spend more than 4 years in the FAPE. So grades 10, 11, and 12 are regarded as the FET phase, and a learner should not spend more than 3 years, which means that if a learner has failed in one of those grades in 1 year, repeats and fails again, that learner must be promoted to the next grade. So with the policy on progression, we had this increase in the number of learners in 2015 and then a further increase in 2016. Now let me indicate that with the policy on progression, learners can be progressed from grade 10 to 11, from grade 11 to 12, but in grade 12, they must satisfy the requirements of the NSC, and learners are not progressed at the end of grade 12. Now, the numbers dropped in 2017, simply because in 2017, we brought in additional criteria. So it was not just the criteria of 4 years in the phase, but learners had to display regular school attendance. Learners had to complete the school-based assessment requirements, and learners had to at least pass three of the subjects in order to be progressed. With the introduction of that criteria, the numbers have dropped. And there's a slight decrease from year to year because our schools are getting to apply the additional criteria more accurately. And we're hoping that we've reached now stability in terms of the application of this policy. And on the next slide, we give you an indication of the numbers that entered per province over the same period. And one can see the decrease, which was in seven of the nine provinces. And in two provinces, Free State and Gauteng, we had a slight increase. Then, Honorable Chair, moving on to slide number 19, which talks about the progress learners and the numbers of progress learners per province between 2018 and 2019. And one can see on this slide that the numbers have increased in all provinces except our two larger provinces where there was a decrease of around 3,000 in KwaZulu-Natal and Limpopo. Now, I spoke about the number that entered, and we then need to look at that in the context of the number that finally arrived. So 616,000 candidates entered, 504,000 candidates finally wrote the exam. And on the next slide, which is slide 21, we provide a breakdown of the number of candidates that did not write the exam. And when we say candidates did not write the exam, it does not mean that they did not write the exam, but they did not write the exam as a whole. In order to be regarded as a candidate who's written the exam, it means you are a candidate that can be resulted as a whole, simply because you've written the exam in all six subjects plus life orientation. So 88,000 candidates went the multiple examination opportunity route, the MEO, which means they would have written either three subjects, four subjects. And these 88,000 candidates would have got subject results for the individual subjects they wrote, but they would not have got a group result in terms of the overall NSC. And the 23,000 were candidates who were absent because of either illness or some circumstance which would have prevented them from writing the exam. We then move on to look at enrollment in terms of gender. I think here again, Honorable Chairperson, we're seeing the higher proportion of female learners to male learners, and not only in terms of percentage, but also in terms of numbers. On the next slide, we see the enrollment of learners with special needs, and this is certainly an area that we are monitoring very closely. And what I think we're particularly concerned about, Honorable Chair, are provinces that have low numbers of learners that are getting to write the examination in terms of learners with special needs, particularly provinces like the Eastern Cape, even Northwest, that we would be monitoring them more closely to make sure that every learner gets the opportunity to be able to write this examination. The next slide, again, is part of our deep analysis, where we look at the age profile of this class of 2019. And I think what we're seeing here, Honorable Chair, is that the bulk of our learners are located in the 17, 18, and 19-year age category. Almost 60% of our learners. This implies that 60% of our learners are getting to grade 12 within the required period. But obviously our concern are those that are beyond 20 years of age, and particularly those who are as old as 25 and 26 years of age. And obviously we need to look at this more closely and put in some kind of mechanism that will ensure that these learners are channeled into an alternative pathway rather than sitting in a class with 17 and 18-year-olds. But I think the interesting other factor here, Honorable Chairperson, is that if you look at the blue graph, that represents the girls, and the red bar represents the boys. So you will see that we have more girl learners getting to grade 12 in terms of the required age than boys. And if you get to 21, 22, 23, you see that the red graph or the red bar is now higher than the blue, which means that boys, there are more overage boys in the system than girls. So it's a credit to the girl learner that they are moving with their age cohort more efficiently than the boys. The other very interesting slide, Honorable Chair, is slide 26, where we are now looking at the impact of social grants on learner performance. Now here we have established that there is what we call an active versus an inactive social grant recipient. The difference being, an active social grant recipient would have received the social grant in the year that he or she has written the grade 12 exam. An inactive social grant recipient would have received the grant in any one of the years prior to grade 12, but not in grade 12. And the reason being that they would have turned 18 by the time they get to grade 12, and that would mean that the grant is now terminated. And what we are going to be doing is to have a discussion with the Department of Social Development to see whether the grants cannot be retained until learners leave school, because later on you will see that this has an impact on performance. So we have 100,000 active social grant recipients and 364,000 inactive. Fee-paying versus non-fee-paying, we have 320,000 learners who are non-fee-paying and 161,000 fee-paying. So 320,000 non-fee-paying, 161,000 fee-paying, and we'll also look at the performance of non-fee-paying versus fee-paying. Our part-time contingent of learners is also important to us, because these are learners that have not completed grade 12 within the stipulated 12 years and have subjects outstanding, and that number has gradually increased from 130,000 to 170,000 in 2019. And in the next slide, which is slide 29, we provide a breakdown of the part-time learners from 2016 to 2019 per province, and that gives you a better indication of our status. We now move on to the results, and I foreground this part of the presentation by just reiterating the policy on progression, and the multiple examination opportunity. In the case of the multiple examination opportunity, just to again refresh our memories, these are learners who are progressed. It's only available to progress learners. It's progress learners who, because of their performance throughout the year, now have the option of writing either a minimum of 3 subjects, 4 subjects, and in the following year, in June, they will write the remaining subjects. The logic is that these learners cannot meet the requirements, and instead of frustrating them, we allow them to take the exam over 2 exam sittings. This policy on multiple examination opportunity has been terminated, and last year was the last examination where the MEO was offered. And the reason for this is that as much as it's a sound policy, but we find that it's being abused by our school principals, where learners are moved into the MEO category simply because the MEO category of learners do not write the full group of subjects, and therefore they are not included in the determination of the pathway. Slide 34 gives us the performance of the 9 provinces, and I'm sure the committee has seen this, so I'm not going to spend time on that. Slide 35 gives us the performance of the system, and I think this is very significant, Honorable Chair, that over a 12-year period, the system has in fact jumped in performance from 62% to 81%. And the 81% is the highest that this country has seen in terms of performance. And certainly it's a credit to our minister and deputy minister for this particular achievement. Now here comes an interesting slide on slide 36. And obviously I think we need to commend our minister for having taken the bold step of embarking on the policy of progression. Because logically one would say if a learner has not met the requirements in grade 11, why move him into grade 12? But here what we see is that 34,000 progress learners wrote all 6 subjects. And of the 34,000, 23,000 attained the NSC. And that gives us a performance of 68.1%. And if one looks at provinces like Northwest, which had the highest, 77.5%, Mpumalanga 72.4%, KwaZulu-Natal 71.8%. So given the opportunity and given the appropriate support, Honorable Chair, we are seeing 23,000 learners that should have been in grade 11 that are now working with a national senior certificate, which gives them admission to higher education institutions, and I'll move to that in a short while in terms of showing that there were a large number of these learners who in fact attained admission to bachelor studies, diploma studies, and even distinctions. The next group of slides looks at the different categories of passes, and I'm not going to go through that, but if one looks at slide 39, I think this is also a good story to share in the sense that we now have reached the highest number of admission to bachelor studies, 186,000 and 144,000 admission to bachelor studies. If we look at the bachelors and the diplomas combined, we have over 300,000 learners of the total 400,000 that pass that have an opportunity to go to a higher education institution. On the next slide, we look at the numbers of admission to bachelor studies per province, and we then look at the trend from 2008 to 2019. And here again, Honorable Chair, we have a significant improvement from 107,000 to 186,000 over the same 12-year period. The bachelor achievements on slide 42 is merely comparing per province 2018 and 2019, and we've had an improvement across all provinces. And let me just go to slide 43, because that's a slide I alluded to. Slide 43 is progress learners. It's the 23,000 learners that I referred to earlier, where 2,600 of these learners now attained admission to bachelor studies, 8,600 admission to diploma studies, and 8,700 admission to higher certificate studies. So this is something that I think we can be proud of in terms of the response that we're seeing in terms of these progress learners. Now, looking at the whole issue of to what extent is the system redressing the ills of the past, and therefore the quintile ranking, which is in fact a poverty index, quintiles 1, 2 and 3 being the schools coming from high poverty levels, and obviously quintiles 4 and 5 are the privileged schools. Now, if you look at slide 44, slide 44 is comparing the bachelor's, diplomas and higher certificate passes in terms of the different quintiles. So what is significant here is that if one looks at quintiles 1 to 3, 55.4% of our learners who are achieving the admission to bachelor's come from quintiles 1, 2 and 3 schools. 55. So the bulk of our learners. So this simply means that all the interventions are beginning to work. In fact, the president calls this the silent revolution. And it's possibly something that we're not advocating loudly enough in terms of the impact that the system is making to these learners that come from the high poverty indexes. The inclusive basket, which I mentioned earlier, in this particular type of analysis, we take 7 criteria which we regard as critical in terms of the National Development Plan, and we then evaluate the system in terms of these 7 criteria, and we then do that, and that's seen on slide 48, in terms of the 9 provinces. So we're not just comparing provinces with regard to the overall pass rate, but we're looking at their maths performance, their maths participation, which is very important, the physical science performance, the admission to bachelor studies, and distinctions. Distinctions is an important indicator of the actual quality of the system. And it's interesting, if one moves on to slide 50, the Western Cape is top of the pile in terms of maths achievement, okay, and followed by the Free State and Gauteng. But one, if one goes to maths participation, one finds that Eastern Cape is at top of the pile. So Eastern Cape is certainly doing something good in terms of encouraging learners to take maths. And one then needs to look at provinces like Western Cape and Northern Cape, where the maths participation is at the lower end. And what we've done on these slides, Honorable Chair, is to put the national standard into the graph. So if you look at this particular graph on maths participation, the national standard, or which we call the national standard, is 4.4. So we're concerned about provinces that are below the national standard, which certainly must bump up their performance. And then we look at physical science and Gauteng at 8.4, while Eastern Cape and Northern Cape are at the lower end. In terms of bachelor's, Gauteng on 6.6 and Northern Cape and Limpopo at the lower end. And distinction, Western Cape with 0.68. Remember, the percentage is in terms of the weighting, and therefore don't think that it's as expressed as part of 100%. Throughput rate, which I think, you know, as a system, it's an area that we've been struggling with. This is a secondary throughput rate, looking at learners that enter grade 10 and learners that finally exit the system at grade 12. So this is something we're monitoring very closely, and obviously we're looking at Mpumalanga, Eastern Cape, Northwest, Free State, Limpopo, who are at the moment below the national average. Now, what is interesting about the inclusive basket is that we're not only looking at this provincially, we're looking at it in terms of the district. And I think if you look at the next two slides, we've got all 75 districts, and we have now analyzed their performance in terms of these seven criteria. And we will monitor the districts very closely in terms of what we are seeing as an emerging picture with regard to these seven criteria. And we are also taking it a step further to even look at school performance. And this we have available, and I think we have that a little bit later. We've then taken the top districts and say, okay, these top districts are top because of their performance in terms of overall past performance. How do they rank in terms of the seven criteria? And that's what is presented from slide 59 up to slide 65, and I'm not going to go through that. And slide 66 compares the performance from 1 year to the other, and we're comparing 2018 and 2019, and we're looking at provinces that have not improved and those that have improved, and that's what the shading really points to. Slide 67 looks at different schools, and I think this is important so that we look at our school performance also in terms of the seven quality indicators. Moving to school and district performance, and here again, Honorable Chair, I think what we're seeing here is the significant improvement in the performance of our quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools. And if you look at the red block, we've in a sense squared or highlighted the quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools that are scoring above 80%. And that's just over 2,000 of the schools, of the 3,400 schools that are performing above 80%. The bulk of the schools come from quintiles 1, 2, and 3. And we have another 300 quintile 1, 2, and 3 schools that are performing at 100%. So these are the positive gains that we see. Moving on to district performance, Honorable Chair, here again, I think the meetings that our minister has on a quarterly basis with our districts is beginning to bear the desired fruit. And if you look at the shift in the overall performance of our district, in 2018, we had 11 districts were performing below 70%. And if you look at it in terms of 2019, we only have 6 districts that are performing below 70%, with none of the districts performing below 60%. And you have 45 of the 75 districts now performing above 80%. Again, a significant improvement in the system. We then move on to subject performance, Honorable Chair, and we monitor the subject performance from year to year, and that's what is presented in slide 73. And obviously, we're monitoring the performance of subjects like economics, life sciences, and mathematics, where there seems to be a decline, or possibly the performance is at a very low level. And we are looking very closely at the performance of mathematics. I think as much as physical science is showing an upward trend, but mathematics seems to be remaining constant at the 50% level. And we are convening a math endeavor in the next few weeks to look at the various aspects, and we want to research this matter intensely so that we get to the root cause. And I think factors like the whole phobia, the maths phobia, is something we need to deal with and get more of our learners to develop this kind of affinity and remove the fear of maths, which I think is a serious impediment to performance in mathematics. On the next few slides, we compare the performance not only at the 30%, but at the 40%. We've been criticized extensively for the fact that we are a system that has a very low threshold requirement of 30%. But the point that I want to clarify is that to attain an NSE, the basic NSE, you need to attain only three subjects at 30%. The other three subjects must be passed at 40%. But that's the basic. But if you look at admission to diploma, the learner must pass four subjects at 40%. Admission to bachelor's is four subjects at 50%. So the 186,000 learners that are now being admitted to bachelor studies, the 186,000 learners have all scored four of their subjects above 50%. So I think we must not lose sight. The 30% is merely there to cater for subjects that learners may not be good at, and we're allowing them to obtain a minimum of 30%. But that's not the standard that we're targeting. And I think that's the difference. My time is running out, Honorable Chair, and I've been trying to move as fast as possible, but I sometimes get stuck. We then look at slide 78, which looks at the age analysis. And again, we're seeing the same trend as the enrollment profile, that our girls are doing better than our boys, and we have better performance at our 17, 18, and 19-year-olds. Slide 79 is very significant. We took each age category, and we looked at the performance. So if you look at our 16-year-olds, they're performing at 91%. 17-year-olds at 90%. 18-year-olds, 88%. So there's a gradual decline with age. So in other words, the longer you keep learners in school, one should not expect their performance to get better. Okay? So it simply means that older age learners, we need to look at an alternative pathway for these particular learners. And the next slide, 80, again, shows you the difference between those who are age appropriate and the other category. Going on to our special needs. We spoke about the 2,871 learners, and here's another good story to share, Honorable Chair. We had 2,319 of these learners, of the 2,800 that finally achieved. And if you look at it, we had 1,300 of the 2,800 that attained admission to bachelor's. So this is a significant achievement, 702 achievement to, admission to diploma study. And we then provide a breakdown for province, and we are monitoring provinces very closely in terms of their performance, in terms of our learners with special needs. And obviously the issues raised by Umalusi about the concessions, that is being monitored very closely. As an examination team, we visit the provinces twice a year, and the whole issue of concessions and accommodation are top priority in terms of these discussions. The next slide gives you the distinctions, and then we move on to social grants. And again here, I wanted to quickly look at the performance of active versus inactive. We have 95,000 active social grant recipients that wrote the exam, and 79,000 achieved, which gives you a pass percentage of 84%. Which is significant. Now look at the inactive. Of the 355,000 that wrote, we have a pass percentage of 59. So the social grant, and obviously this needs more research, it simply means that the withdrawal of the social grant, we think, has an impact on performance, and therefore the motivation to keep the social grant if the learner is still at school. Looking at fee-paying versus non-fee-paying, I think here, what we want to show is that if you compare first the independent schools that write the state exam versus fee-paying schools, in fact, our fee-paying schools are doing better than the independent schools. The other important point is that if you compare fee-paying to non-fee-paying, there is a difference, but it's not as significant as one would expect. Our non-fee-paying schools are performing at 77% compared to fee-paying at 87%. So it simply means that Our attention to non-fee-paying schools is beginning to show. Then we look at correctional services, and we say that the NSC and education will follow you wherever you are. So even in prison, you can still write the exam. And of the 202 that wrote, 133 of them attained the NSC. We then provide you the performance of our part-time learners, and I want to move quickly, given the last 5 minutes that I have Honorable Chair, to look at the Umalusi report, the Umalusi directors. We take these directors very seriously, and we have taken each of their directors and we've put together a detailed plan articulating how each of these issues will be dealt with. And we admit that there are some issues that have remained in the non-compliant category over the last 2 years, but with a system as large as ours, and if you look at it, most of the non-compliance comes in the area of school-based assessment, where one needs to ensure that your 8,000 schools that offer school-based assessment need to comply. And that's an area that we're struggling to bring the system into full compliance. In terms of, for example, question paper development, we're saying we will have comprehensive review sessions of our question papers and establish what are the weaknesses and how can we train our examiners so that they address each of the issues raised by Umalusi. In the case of school-based assessment, I think it's about, again, training and stronger monitoring and moderation to make sure that our teachers can set a task that is of the required standard and also mark these tasks so that no learner is disadvantaged. We also are looking at the exam administration, where I think we've made significant progress in terms of exam administration, but obviously there are areas in the system, for example, you know, the shredding record, and we're also raising this strongly with our principals about the shortage of staff and how this can be managed. The life orientation issue, which is obviously administered at the school level. Marking is a top priority, and I think we've made significant progress with marking, particularly in terms of the additional quality assurance mechanisms that we've brought in, but obviously marker selection still remains an area that we think we can improve with stronger monitoring, and again, you know, issues of our marker standardization meetings where simple things like getting provinces to make sure that 20 scripts are marked before. I mean, those are things that we certainly will give attention to in the 2020 examination. And obviously with load shedding, we now need to make sure that not only are marking centers on the budget, but also centers where subjects like computer applications, technology, information, IT is offered, that they have generators so that we don't have any disruption with the exam. In the last 2 minutes that I have, Honorable Chair, we're looking at the social justice principle, and we take each of the six criteria and then analyze the NSC data in terms of these six criteria. And if you look at it, and I'm not going to go through it line by line, we're doing well in terms of access. I think that's one area that we've done exceptionally well. Even in redress, and I think I've been pointing that out throughout my presentation, particularly in terms of progress learners and its impact. Redress in terms of fee-paying versus non-fee-paying schools and how they are doing, and looking at social grants and its impact, correctional services. So that certainly, and in terms of equity, I think we've done exceptionally well, particularly in terms of the girl learner and learners, particularly I think in terms of their performance with regard to bachelor's and quality. Again, I think this is an issue that we say we can still improve in terms of quality. And therefore, the key quality indicators like admissions to bachelor's is one that we are monitoring very closely, and also looking at our ELSIN learners. And efficiency, I think it's listed there. And I think one of the important aspects to mention is that 87.7% of the learners that entered grade 1 in 2008 when they were in grade 1 are the learners that we're currently seeing in grade 12. And that possibly explains part of the improvement. And inclusivity, I've spoken about. In conclusion, in the 10 seconds that I have left, is to say that we are a system on the rise, Honorable Chair, and I'm hoping that I've convinced the committee to believe in that. But there are areas, and we've identified four areas. There are other areas as well, particularly our enrollment in gateway subjects, the math, the physical science, our technical subjects. We want to move the system in terms of technical pathways so that we don't have all learners targeting university, but learners deciding to go for the vocational and the occupational pathways. And those are the issues that we're targeting. Special needs learners, there's certainly much more that we could do. And then finally, raising the bar in terms of pass requirement. And I'm hoping that when we get to 2030, we are going to say, in the words of the National Planning Commission in 2011, that we can now tell a new story. From the long queues of 1994, which has been a long and winding road, but we have remade the country. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. You are the last person to say that. Thank you very much, Dr. Polia. Honorable members, let me know then the Honorable Murwatsesa. Honorable Masabalala. Honorable Tembekwayo. Honorable Sugar. Welcome, Tatumo. Honorable Dobo. Honorable Adwon. In that order.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Once again, can I be allowed to start on that unorthodox and unpopular approach? This cell-like room, it's a burning house, I must confess. The makeshift and mechanical air conditioning behind us is not paying the price. I hope next time those who are arranging, they will respect this portfolio committee. Education is a very big, big interest in itself, and then they will be considerate next time. However, thank you. 2 points to raise. Madam Chair, let's appreciate the availability of the Department of Basic Education under the sphere headship of the Honorable the Deputy Minister. Thank you very much for coming with your generals to this all-important portfolio committee meeting. In general speaking, the department is performing well with regard to the manner in which they manage the examinations. I think you deserve, we will give you an applause next time, but you deserve credit for the good work that you have done. And it is in line with the caption, sustaining a system that is on the rise, a rising system. You are on course. However, a worrying factor, as it was projected on the screen, is the number of learners who continue to register for mathematics. I think this we must say unequivocally so. You see, if we don't rise to that, this country will one day be what we never intended it to be. There's no way in which we can write off the importance of mathematics and all the related subjects in physical science and technological subjects. And I'm asking myself, I have seen what Umalusi had to say, and when they made a remark, especially with regard to the numbers that registered for mathematics vis-a-vis the performance. The commended Eastern Cape that it is still doing well in as far as registering the great and the highest numbers of mathematics. But my question with regard to this challenge is it a question of attitude? Or is it because it's an element of incompetence or just a general demotivation for these learners to seek to register or enroll for mathematics? Hence, I would plead with the Department of Education to have an exclusive research in as far as this is concerned, so that we are able to arrest the situation. Saying so, Chairperson, because one factor which I think it is leading to this poor performance in mathematics is either teachers feel less remunerated, there are no incentives, and when they see greener pastures, they leave. Or either maybe we are not doing enough with regard to intensive education training for those teachers. The second point is on learner transport. Those who have got their televisions now will agree with me that the breaking news talks about the people who died after jumping from a moving taxi following attacks. You in Jimiston and Gauteng around Jimiston. You see, I don't think, Honorable Minister, we are doing enough with regard to learner transport to schools. Our learners remain our responsibility from home until even they reach school. If we are going to disown them when they are outside the schoolyard, then we must know we are not playing ball. This is such a huge challenge that you see, when the learners realize that there are no provision on transport, learner transport, the next thing they do, they opt to any makeshift arrangement, risky or non-risky, and the consequences are as I've just alluded to. Can we rise up and see how best we can do? An example in question is the court case which is on in Limpopo, where the first respondent is the MEC. There is an advert, somebody sent it in here, maybe taking advantage that I'm working in Parliament. The advert on the bidding, and what they discovered is the people who do not even have a single transport won the tenders to transport learners. Those with transport failed dismally. The consequence were those without transport ended up going to the ones with transport to say assist as well. So the case is revolving around that. Let's rise up, Honorable Deputy Minister, and check in all the provinces if at all the ball is being played equitably with regard to the learner transport before we lose many of our kids. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chen. I just want to applaud the department and Umalusi for the report that they have just shared with us. To me, Che, I think when we see a good work that has happened, we have to give credit where the credit is due. Because sometimes we don't give credit to the right people and then we end up losing that quality of people because of the scarce skills out there. To me, Chair, both reports that we have received, I'm really, really very excited about them. And I don't know whether it's because I'm blind or what, I don't know, but I'm really happy about it. And I'm saying to the Department of Basic Education, thank you very much, guys. It's a job well done. If we can keep the work that we do at this pace, I'm sure we will definitely achieve more than what we have achieved right now. I'm very proud of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I have a question to both the Umalusi and the Department of Education. Based on the information that was received, emailed to us as part of the complaints that came from the learners that sat for the examination. One, the fact being that the Umalusi have got their own program in place before and during the examination. But I didn't see any clause where there was a provision of post-examination to say if the parents and the learners that wrote the exams have got a query, how far and who handles those queries. Because according to the information received, these learners have been progressing and doing extremely well in their various schools on level 7 attainment of their results, only to drop down to a 54%, which is 5 or 4, level 4. And they were humbly requesting for a possible remark of their examination to say maybe, that, I mean, they were not asking in a bad spirit. They were saying, we have performed well from our grade 10 and we did our best in grade 12, only to be surprised by the percentage that they got at the end. I just would like to know, because this was sent to us, what is it that both the departments did in order to address this issue? Is there a platform that we can help them so that definitely they can get, like in the universities, if I feel I wrote well and my lecturer failed me, I go and ask for a remark of my own script so that I can be satisfied with the percentage that I got. Secondly, the mention was made of the inactive social grants as maybe a cause of the failures. And the reason was because the learners had attained 18 years, and as a result, the social grant was discontinued. I'm begging to say, can there be an agreement reached with the social grants people to say, let the social grant continue as at when the learners are still in school, because it helps them to can continue with their own school. So the very same suggestions, I would like that it definitely can be carried forward so that the provision can be made for them. The third one, I'm just concerned about the fees, the paying school fees and the non-paying school fees. And I'm making a call to the Department of Education to say, please go and have a look at the amount, the school fees that are paid in other schools. Very exorbitant, very expensive. Whether it's a boarding school or what, but they are very expensive to such an extent that those schools obviously have a less number of the black learners. Only the black learners whose parents can afford has got an opportunity to attend those schools. So can we have at least maybe a bracket of the highest amount of boarding school fee and school fee that can be paid so that some of the black learners can have an opportunity to be schooled in some of the best schools in South Africa. That is the second one. And then the last one that I would like to raise is based on the feeding scheme, which is definitely a problem. Can there be more monitoring about the feeding scheme so that the feeding scheme feeds the learners, not the educators? And the feeding scheme must not be a basic for somebody to create a business, to open a business on the food that is supposed to be used for disadvantaged learners. Somewhere, somehow, there is a discrepancy and there is a problem, because you find that in schools, there are teachers who are assigned to take care of these feeding schemes. And there are certain things that are happening in that process unseen by the Department of Education. but I would like to say thank you for the presentation. And if it was possible, this last presentation needs to have its own day for engagement. It's very good. We need to engage with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I firstly want to say thank you for the both presentations that was made to us and for the hard work that we know that goes into what you do. We must say thank you for that. I think when we talk about social justice principles in terms of access, quality, redress, efficiency, the gaps on the ground is very clear, and we cannot underestimate the role that it plays in the learners that are not part of the achievements that's on these slides. And I'm talking specifically the learners that either falls out of our schooling system. I actually had a question to just know how many boys are dropping out of our school in the last phase of their school life, because that directly impacts them, the families that they are going to rear, and whether we're able to get them back into some kind of a system. So that is a question, if we do have that. In terms of dropouts in the latter phase, how many boys do we lose there? In terms of the, I'm just wanting to highlight a few things that certainly for me is very concerning. And the one is that the impact of overcrowding in terms of the quality of learning that our learners experience, specifically in our poorer areas. And it was clearly visible to us when we were in Limpopo now. And the impact of that in terms of access to, say, for instance, laboratories, in terms of sciences and that, so infrastructure, how that impacts the results specifically in maths and sciences. That is a comment that I want to make, because it affects our schools badly, and we saw that now. And the one of the things that was highlighted is the poor management that is happening in our quintile, in our poorer schools, because the monitoring is not done effectively. And so the knock-on effect is that you have learners that are absolutely passionate to follow on science and maths, but we drop them because the quality that we provide because of overcrowding are not met. We have two problems that came to our attention. The one was in Mitchell's Plain we have Mondale High School that is classified as a quintile 4 school. Now that is a school in a poor area. And because of that, there is no nutrition program in the school, and many parents cannot pay school fees. The same with the school in Mossel Bay, Hillcrest Senior Secondary, is also classified as a quintile 4 school. It is also problematic because you have many parents who cannot pay school fees there, and also children that are really suffering because they come from poor households, and they have a problem in terms of the nutrition program. So if the department can just answer on those. Then one of the saddest things that I have in the Western Cape, because I serve as the Western Cape, is that we have many students that for whatever economic reason moves to the Western Cape. They move in the latter part because they have no option, because there's no one looking after them in the Eastern Cape or wherever they're coming from. They come to the Western Cape, and those kids are not accommodated in our schools. So we have kids that I had personally had cases of kids in grade 11 that couldn't find placement in the province, and we lost kids to either pregnancy or drugs. And I'm not making it up. It is there. So how the department can assist so that provinces really do something to accommodate learners that through social circumstances are moving here. And also from a budget perspective, whether the money can follow the child. I don't know how it works. You can educate me on that. But so that when the kids are moving to the other province, that money immediately follows them as well. We really need interventions with maths and science, and if the department can please tell this committee, how are we going to attract and retain maths and science and technically skilled teachers. Is there a program now that the department is putting together in order to attract it? Because the biggest reason why, one of the biggest reasons apart from overcrowding, is the fact that we are not attracting teachers or skilled teachers to teach in those areas. I'll drop it there. And if I can please have a list of vocational schools per province, I have asked this before, if it can be presented to us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wish to start by, while commending the presentations, both presentations like our colleagues have done, because they are very impressive. Chairperson, let me start maybe with this one. I have a request from a parent whose learner is at Bria College in Durban. The parent sent it through SMS. It is like Bria College did not do what it was supposed to do in terms of moderating industrial electronics, because the teacher was on sick leave. If maybe the department would assist in that one, it could be true, but maybe one would like to get some information. Not necessarily now, because I know you didn't come prepared with this one, unless you have information. Chairperson, just a comment on maths. Yes, we are worried about mathematics and the level at which our learners are performing. And we do need to do something like the department has suggested, sooner rather than later. I am not sure whether we do not have teachers who can teach mathematics in the country. Chairperson, I taught mathematics without qualifying as a teacher. Yes, I did that, and I was able to obtain distinctions. Was it called OA in a Lesser's card? I was able to get a couple of them. It was a good school, but the only thing I know about what I did is that the teacher needs to have love and passion of the subject. If the department can think of that whilst we go to this Indaba and getting worried about whether we do have people who can teach this subject or not. Mathematics is not that a complicated subject like people usually say it is. I just wanted to touch on that one and pass. I've got quite a couple of questions here. The GEC at grade 9, one is very worried about whether the department is thinking along the lines of having this certificate properly quality assured at that level by UMALUSI. And I would even wish to hear what UMALUSI would say in terms of the importance of quality assurance at that level. In particular, because for some, it will be the last certificate to leave the formal schooling with. One would want to hear both the department and Umalusi on that one. I think it's very important. Chairperson, I like I said, I had quite a number of questions, but because of time, maybe if I could just rest at that. Yes, I've got a lot of them. I'm stopping now. I'm very considerate.
Very progressive. Thank you very much, Chair. Let me also join the queue and acknowledge and appreciate the reports that were presented both by Umalusi and the department. Yes, indeed, you raised the bar. As our term, the sixth parliament, it means we must maintain the standard as the portfolio committee, or even do more in making sure that we do our oversight properly. So it means it must increase. So it's a job on our side. On the Malusi, this is the entity that gets clean audit. And I take it very serious, the recommendations that you made, and I think the department will also make sure that some of the, or even all of them are being implemented, because I believe more can be done when these recommendations can be implemented. But on the department, as we come from our oversight chair, I think we must just have a report, a comprehensive report of our oversight and seriously address those issues that we came across in, and not only for the Limpopo province only, but also for the entire country. Because I think most of them are policy issues that we also need to look at them as a portfolio committee, where there are reviews that need to be done, they must be done. The issue of scholar transport, there are different, situations wherever we go. The issue of the distance and all these things, they must be looked into. The school nutrition and how they get appointed and all that is some of the things that we must really zoom into and address them, because I believe the impact on the performance of our learners at school. But when it comes to the issue of the math subject, the thorny one, I think some of the things, they must be, started at the very early age, like teaching our kids and focus on learning math at a very early age, even if at foundation phase, we know that we are grooming them, to perform better when they finish school. And we must also take note of some of the contribution that is made, or support that is made by the department to schools, to teachers, taking them to training and all that. And also the Funza Lushaka, I think it must be, I don't know if it can also address the issue of teachers, more especially math and science teachers that are not enough in our school. So maybe if Funza Lushaka also can be a vehicle just to drive and increase in making sure that we have more of teachers. But also, Deputy Minister, I think the IGR meetings must really address the issue of the social ills that we find ourselves in the society that we live in, and all these challenges that we are facing there, because some of the issues it cannot be addressed by basic education only. You need social development, the issue of safety in schools, you will need police to come in, where there must be programs that seek to address that. We know there's a very serious issue of bullying in school. There are kids who lost their lives, because of the environment they find themselves in, the schools that are not safe. So it's some of the challenges that we need to, as a department, all the departments must come in. Even before a child can get to class and learn, at least all these other avenues, the administrative avenues are being covered, because they impact on the teaching, the actual teaching and learning of our children or learners at school. So I have also many questions and comments and suggestions, but because of time, I think I'll pause there. But I really like to applaud the department and Umalusi, you know, for raising the bar, and I know we must be on our toes now to make sure that all these challenges, they must be phased out, and our learners, they must get a quality education. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Adwans. My question to Umalusi is, when the marking is commencing, what causes other provinces to mark before others? I take it that you are supposed to have a date to start the marking, but on the presentation it looks like it doesn't happen like that. But also on your presentation, there is an issue that you have raised on the non-compliance of procurement of your vehicles for the distribution of question papers. And if you know that is a challenge, why are you not using maybe couriers? Because let's say something happens. If you know that your cars are not roadworthy, and it's something that you can tell us here, that your cars, sometimes they are not roadworthy, why are you using them? If they are not roadworthy to distribute those papers. But the third question that I have is the process of appeal. Let's say a school, for instance, I'm raising it because when we were doing oversight, there was a principal who underperformed. And part of the reasons, he said, no, but I would really want to go to Umalusi because I don't agree with this outcome. You know? So I'm sitting here and I'm trying to think, if really a person feels that, no man, I don't agree with this outcome, what is the process then to appeal both the marking and the moderation to Umalusi instead of just sitting and agreeing with the results? But also, is Umalusi going down to the principals in particular? Because if they are the ones who say, but I don't agree, which means they don't necessarily, they are not confident, you know, they are not confident with the quality that you are bringing as Umalusi. But I'm raising that because it has happened where I was. I know generally South Africans agree with your standard of the work that you are doing. But I'm raising it because it happened to where I was. On DBE, there are just few issues that you have mentioned. One is the full time cohort learners. For now, obviously, the department would be able to respond. The number of learners that are entering examination, that are registering, differs every year to the learners that write. What causes that? Obviously, your research is able to tell by now what causes that the numbers, and they don't go up, they always go less. To even an extent of those that are learners at correctional services. I mean, they are there. What makes them not to write examinations at the end of the year? And the ones on the special learners, because it's the same. It cuts across all learners. The number that enter is not the number that rises at the end of the year. So there should be a reason for that, and you must be able to tell us what is the reason for that. And I think members have spoken on issues of mathematics and physical science and so on. But my main issue is your technical schools. And I think you've touched on it, Dr. Polia, when you made your presentation. I think the department must really consider supporting those schools. Supporting them to an extent that you make sure that you don't lose your personnel in those schools, except for issues of pensions where you can't do anything about it. But when that kicks in, there needs to be a way where we are able to cover that up. We were at a technical school where it's closed because it was supported by a mine in Limpopo. And when the mine decided not to support it, it did not continue. Now our technical schools are. We need to put an emphasis that my child does not necessarily think that for him to be a successful person must be a doctor, you know. But how do we push our children that there is math, there is science, but there is technical subjects as well, and have a program that we drive as a department that encourages them to go to technical schools, because I think there is that need in South Africa. We need that, and I'm not undermining the statements that are made on mathematics and physical science. They are also welcome. But how would you do to support a program that is Funza Lushaka? Probably you need to do the same thing in supporting a program that focuses on technical schools, so that we are able to make our children focus on other things that they can better do, rather than being only academic. Thanks. Maybe I must also stop there because we really ran out of time. And DM, let me hand over to you then.
Thank you, Chair. I will allow the team to respond. Then I will close if there shall be any gap. We'll start with Umalusi, if they are ready.
Okay, we are ready, DM. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks very much to the honorable members for the positive feedback that we are getting from them on the work that we do. The message will be conveyed to the Umalusi staff and to council when council meet at the end of this month. I'll touch only on the questions that are relevant to Umalusi, and I'll be very quick. First of all learners, Honorable Thembekwayo, are entitled to a remark. And what is good with the remark process that the department runs is that if, for instance, a learner got 54% and is not happy with that level 5, when the remark happens, and the observation is that he actually got 50, he's going to retain his 54%. The mark only changes if it improves. Otherwise, the initial mark will be retained so that the children are not frustrated or they are not scared of asking for a remark. That's how good the system is. The initial mark will be retained. So there is that, and Dr. Polly and Ms. Paraji can expand on that later on. Honorable Ngobo, on the question of the GC, during December we received formal documentation from the department regarding the GC for the first time. The initial discussions had been informal among the officials, but they submitted the qualification now for us to assess formally. And the technical staff at UMAS has looked at the document. On Friday last week, a committee of council met to look at the input of the technical people at UMALUSI and the department did a presentation at that meeting, and they have referred some aspects of the qualification back to the department to say, you need to strengthen this area, that area, and that area, and then refer back the qualification back to us. Yes, indeed, there is a need. You need to check the system, whether it is functioning well, because learners are only confronted with external examinations at the end of grade 12. There is nothing that checks the system from grade 1 to grade 12 currently, but GC will help to say there is going to be external examination at some point, and the teachers will be compelled to do their work. What is going to happen here is that once the colleagues in the department have tightened the areas of concern, they'll resubmit and we'll look at whether they've done that, and then the Qualification Standards Committee, which is a committee of council, will then make a recommendation to council. And council will still critique the document and maybe even refer it back. But if council is happy, we are then going to be able to register a qualification with the South African Qualifications Authority. It is going to be now a formal qualification on our framework of qualification. The qualification is going to be quality assured in terms of the writing of the examination in the same way as we quality assure the National Senior Certificate. However, what we have said is that whilst every learner is going to write the GEC, we would want to say those who don't want to exit the system should not necessarily get a certificate. You should get a certificate on request. When you feel that you now want to leave the system completely, there should be room for that. So that you don't send a message to the learners that with the GEC they have arrived. It should be seen as a qualification that channels learners to vocation, occupations, or academic stream for now, and not that they have arrived, because we know they would not have arrived. So that is the long and short of it. Umalus is going to take do the uptake, and with the budget also following the qualification. And yesterday morning I was in discussions with the DG on the matter of the budget for this additional responsibility that we are getting. Honorable Aduan, indeed, the recommendations that we are giving as directives to the department are very important. They are very important, and they can only help to strengthen the system if the necessary remedial measures, corrective measures, are taken. And I want to say the system will continue to grow because of the independence that the minister, the deputy minister, and the DG are giving to Umalusi. There's no interference. We are heart-hitting. There is the necessary tension sometimes when we pronounce, you know, to say we are pronouncing and we are hard on our pronouncement. They respect that. And that is ensuring the health of the system if we allow that space. And that, for that, I want to commend the department. And also commend this portfolio committee for holding us accountable. Without you holding us accountable, we will not be able to do our work. And thank the council for the guidance and for holding management accountable. In that way, we can have a system that we can all be proud of, which has the necessary checks and balances, and will continue to grow as a system. The issue of the marking by the province at different times, it is in the purview of the department. But we have to appreciate the fact that the dynamics and the logistics in the different departments are not the same. So Umalusi has accepted that the marking can start at different times because the availability of marking venues, the availability of markers, is the competency of the department, dictated too by the dynamics and the logistics in a particular province. We have accepted that. And we see nothing untoward with that, because ultimately the learners are going to get the results at the same time countrywide. The issue of the procurement of vehicles, it is not Umalusi's vehicles, it is the vehicles of the different provincial education departments as they do the work. Now when we do the state of readiness and we look at the vehicles, we say no, but we are not happy that you are going to monitor the examinations with these kinds of vehicles. Now it is for the department and the provincial education department to correct what we have observed as a quality assurer, to to say you have to correct this. It is not our vehicles. The Umalusi vehicles are roadworthy. The last time I checked, Chairperson. The last point I want to respond to, and then Prof will talk on mathematics. He is a specialist in mathematics as well. The speaker is a historian. On the outcome of underperforming schools who complain about Umalusi, we are available. Like Remark is available, I've indicated that, but also available to do advocacy. At the beginning of this year, in fact, during the standardization meeting, I alerted all the HODs to say I'm available to go anywhere you invite me to come and explain the work of Umalusi, our processes, how we go about our business, and I'm not going to charge a fee. I'll come wherever you call me in the country to do advocacy. The only way the principals can understand our work is with advocacy, advocacy, advocacy. I've gone to a number of universities, almost all the public universities in the country, and I've met lecturers and professors in the faculties of education where they were suspicious about our work. I want to submit to this honorable committee that by the time I finish the presentation, I've got converts. If I were to make an altar call, my church would be full. They agree with our approaches. They say even at university, they don't quality assure the way we do. They admit, and they say we respect our processes. So I'm available to go to any province. I've written to the DG at the beginning of this year. I've written to all provincial heads of departments to say, I want to talk to your principals, curriculum specialists, subject advisors, to spread the message of how Umalusi does this work, so that we don't have these doubts and myths about Umalusi and how it does its work. Chairperson, on that note, I want to rest my case and hand over to Prof. with your permission. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Chair, I just wanted to say just a couple of things about NAS, not a lot, but before I forget, I think the Honourable Noble did raise the issue about a college, Berea College, that is in KZN. We need to know more about that, but in any case, the DBE is not the department, it's the DA. We do, as Umalusi, we do quality assure those colleges, the examination. So I thought I'd just mention that before I forget. For mathematics, it is the case, Honourable Chair, that several of the Honourable Members had made comments, and I'm not going to extend the discussion. I appreciate the broad concern for this. But I have to say that I don't know of anybody that doesn't struggle with mathematics. Everybody struggles with math. I struggle with math. And I think therein lies an answer, and that is that we must not give our learners the impression that because they're struggling with mathematics that it cannot be done. So we have to teach resilience and mental toughness. And we must make them understand that the fact that you've been struggling for 10 minutes and you haven't found the answer doesn't mean there isn't an answer. So I wanted to say that at Umalusi we look at the, as you know, we didn't adjust any marks for mathematics or for physical science. Physical science has improved. Mathematics, 80% of the candidates scored less than 50%. So there's no other subject behaves like that. Although the overall pass rate is just over 50%, the quality of those passes needs a lot of attention. So just in closing, I want to say we have to look, and the Honourable Members have pointed this out, that it's not just one area. We have to look at teaching, we have to look at learning, we have to look at the society as a whole. I think that it is true that we need to find out who is teaching our learners. We need to do an audit, particularly at the top level. And because I believe part of the problem is the way mathematics is taught. And so it's no use just doing old exam papers. That doesn't help you master mathematics. It's how to deal with non-routine problems. Secondly, for learners, and I'm happy that the Honourable Aduans has pointed out, you start at ECD and then you work up. And I think that the point that I made earlier is it's not just a cognitive issue, it's not just something in your head, it's also emotions and social beliefs about what you can and cannot do. All those things need to be cultivated from an early age. The only thing I can say, Honourable Chair, for this past exam, as it was for others, the exam for both papers 1 and paper 2 were CAPS compliant. There were no questions outside. They were also consistent with the subject assessment guidelines. So the cognitive demand was at the right level. But it is clear that students, the learners, are ill-prepared to deal with anything that presents a cognitive stretch. They can only deal with it if it's routine, and therein lies the problem. So thank you, Chair. I'm very happy that the DBE is planning this in Durban. Umalusi has also been speaking about a dialogue to find out exactly what the problem is by gathering a lot of voices. So thank you for your contribution.
Thank you, Chair. I think Umalusi has covered almost 50% of the sessions, because we don't differ much, we work together. On the questions of technical high schools, which might have been closed due to them having been supported by the mine. Remember that in this new administration, vocational and technical schools is the way to go. So if there's any vocational school or technical school that was in operation and no longer in operation, we are looking forward as a department to open them, because that is the way to go. So it might have been in the near past where it was not necessarily a key priority like now. Same as the issue of maths. Maths, when you look at our priorities and our targets, we want to improve the number of learners who pass mathematics by 50% and above. That is the key target of the department. And that's why we see that what we are looking forward to is not necessarily what is happening. Then that's the cause for concern. That's why we are going to hold this math in Durban. But on the math and science teachers, remember, as the country, we relied, especially in rural areas, on teachers coming from Zimbabwe and other areas. But at the same time, we are training our own teachers. Though it's being defeated by that, our children, when they get distinctions in math and science, they don't want to do teaching. They want to do something else, engineering and whatever. But it's because of the names, not necessarily. I know of a teacher who left teaching, went to join provincial government. And when he arrived there, he found that he has been disadvantaged in terms of the salary. No. Then he started pushing all of us to push him to be at least a chief director. But you applied for this post and you saw the compensation, and you were attracted by it. So why should now we push you to another level? Because some teachers think that what they earn is less than what provincial and national government officials are earning. And it's not the case. That's not true. I've experienced that over the almost 10 years being MEC for education, because people get frustrated after having left teaching, joining other things. Even private sector, some they do and they want to come back, which is what we are experiencing every day. So that's why in our bursaries, the Fundza Lushaka bursaries, we don't centrally recruit. We recruit per district so that they look at the areas where they need such teachers the most. So some other things may happen, but that is our intention, that we know that if you come from Kovimvaba,
in the Eastern Cape. When recruitment is done, you know the schools where we don't where teachers don't want to go. But a child from Govimvaro would want to go and teach his siblings and peers. So that's what we're encouraging. And it's working. These young teachers, the Funza Lushaka teachers, are so excited. When you go to schools, you find them there. They are so excited to come and teach back at home. So that's what we are doing. We are, of course, going to take an audit of our teachers, that do we have sufficient teachers, as well as by provinces, that let them check on math, science, and technology, so that we know exactly that when we say we intervene, where exactly are we intervening? Because you'll rely on the district and say they know their priorities, they know they applied, and when time to recruit comes, you find a geography learner, a student has been recruited instead of a math teacher. You find there are math teachers, math students with distinctions who are lingering around. Yet we need them to take them to universities to go and do training. So that's why it looks like in rural areas this and that, but we are trying by all means to close that gap. And when we can analyze the results can tell that rural provinces produce more quality results than some other areas. Yet we are responsible for the whole system. We don't want rural to perform better than urban, but our focus was there because most of the people had this belief that education in rural areas is not as effective as in urban areas. But we are trying by all means to close that gap. And from where we are sitting and from the presentation that was made now, it shows that that gap is closing. Then there are this quintiling of schools. Find somewhere quintiles some years back, but the material condition on the ground determines the quintile of the school. If the majority of the people, just like your indigent in a municipality, if majority of people are not working in the area, the school cannot remain quintile 4 if majority of the learners and the parents in the area are not working. That school cannot remain in quintile 4. That's why you find a school next to a town being quintile 3 and being an office school, because the situation was assessed and we know. Because the issue of school fees is an agreement of parents and the school, the SGP and the school. It's not imposed by the department. That's why some schools, when you want to change them from quintile 4 to quintile 3, they fight tooth and nail that they want to remain quintile 4 because they want to parents to pay, because the money that comes from government is not enough. They are used to charging parents that exorbitant amount of money. That's why sometimes they fight and they win. So there's nothing that the department can do if they fight in the name of parents, that we, the parents of this school, want our school to be a fee-paying school. So there's no way where you can impose yourself and say, no, it must be an office school. But we are looking at that. And if in any area, whether it's a very affluent area, there's a family that is unemployed, they report, they must report to the department. We live here and our children are attending at this school and it's a free-paying school and we are not working. Then what applies to the Nofi school will apply to these children in this free-paying school. The department, the provinces will make sure that in their budget they allocate for those, the number of children whose parents are not working, and it's recorded as such, and it's known and it has been proven. So, on the issue of learner transport, especially the one that was raised by Ntate Mora Pesha, is that the tender. Hey, why there's a tender, there will always be something else, unintended consequences, because some people, they see money-making scheme, yet the transport is for making education to be accessible.
is not to make people to be rich. Same as school nutrition. That's why some people, when they want a tender for school nutrition, they even tell you that, somebody is rich because of school nutrition. We are paying 2 rand for a child. How can you be rich when we are paying 2 rand per child? So it means the child is going to be fed with 3 cents. So, but the aim is for the children to eat and to be transported to school. Not to make individuals rich, but because the department cannot have the capacity to do this work on its own. So there will be these other things that are coming. Sometimes business people who are also parents, they will take departments, provincial departments to court. And after the tender has been awarded, and these ones who felt that they were entitled, and they're working with some officials inside who give them information, say, you know, you were the ones who were supposed to get the tender. They will work and sabotage the system, and these ones, they go to court and they will win. Then the court says, you pay all of them. How really, if we are South Africans, patriotic South Africans, knowing very well that we are all interested in the education of our children, milking the government this way, knowing that the very same government does not have sufficient money. So this is what is happening. But we encourage provinces to follow the supply chain processes, that there should be no loopholes. But because some of the systems, because if there's a human, the human element in any system will bring such setbacks. So, the grant recipients. It's a good thing that as long as they are at school, they must still continue to receive grants. It will be like the ones of child support grant, that the children will opt to have a child so that they can have money. So I'll opt to fail so that I stay at school for a longer time to continue receiving the social grant. The stats here, we produce them, we analyze this information to show that the recipients of grants are coming from the poorest of the poor. And when we analyze, it shows that those that are coming from the poorest of the poor, they perform better. Not necessarily that we want the stipend to stay forever, the grant to stay forever, but that where there's this grant because they don't have anything, and all the time when we speak, we say, hey, this education is not supporting the poorest of the poor. This education system is not supporting the poorest of the poor. And the scholar transport is for the poorest of the poor. The school nutrition is for that. Child support grant is for that. And we analyze this result to show that indeed all this support systems do work for the children coming from disadvantaged areas and communities and parents. A principal who will say, as a principal, an underperforming principal. I always interviewed a top performing learner and a poor performing learner. The poor performing learner will always, one governor knows very well, will always blame everybody except himself. It's only him or her who is clean. Everybody is, has led to him fail. Same as principal. When the principal has not performed, the school is not, who show you a crack? And say, oh, there's a crack there. There's a crack. The crack in the classroom can cause children not to pass. And that's why you are surprised that a principal will jump a circuit, jump a district, jump a province, jump DBE, and complain about Umalusi. Oh, my God. Umalusi, their processes are free and fair and transparent, and they work with DBE, they work with provinces, they work with everybody. So it cannot be a principal who will come and say, Umalusi, their systems are not fair. That will not be correct. It's because the principal is the only one who is right. Everybody else is wrong.
I think that was the case. If there are other questions, specific questions to share, which might not have been covered, members will always be free to write them and we'll give answers. Thank you.
I think it's 10 past 1. We must still adopt my button.
Just only one follow-up, and thank you for allowing me. Chairperson, it's a concern, I'm only raising a concern for both the department and Umalusi to think about. Please, Professor Holming, when Dr. Rakomese responds him on the GEC issue, he mentioned something like it's not necessarily all the learners that will be given certificates. It's those who may want those certificates. I am saying, I believe very strongly, and I believe it's a fact, that it will have a psychological effect in terms of the value of the certificate. If it's just going to be something that we have to ask for, it's just that certificate. You see, Chairperson, go out, I'm repeating this, I once said it in the portfolio committee. Go out, drive anywhere, you will see the grade 12 learners on the bus stops, everybody going to school, all of it, after hours they remain there. Because of the respect they accord to this certificate they'll be getting at grade 12. Not necessarily because they'll be going to work. It has that psychological effect as well. And I am sure, I can bet my bottom dollar, you have introduced this, it's good. It will improve the quality of learning in the sense that immediately it gets introduced, you will see a change of attitude. First, to the educators in grade 9. They will be fighting through all the means to make sure that their learners pass. And the learners will be doing their best they can to attend school, whether it's during the learning hours or after the learning hours or it's the weekends or whatever. I'm saying, please think about it again. Let's issue these certificates to everybody who is deserving.
No, I think we valid on that advice. Thank you very much, DM, and your team. Congratulations once more. 81.3%, it's too much. It's too much. Congratulations once more, and we'll allow you 2 minutes to vacate the boarding room, and then after that we'll adopt the amendment.
Yeah, I'm looking at